What is up, people? This is your friendly neighborhood pharmacist, and I am back for another episode of Health Facts. It has been 2 weeks, and we are in the 100th wave of this pandemic. We have the Delta variant, Mu variant, Alpha, Gamma, and its fellow Greek brothers and sisters. All I see on the internet are people arguing about whether COVID is real or not, while our healthcare system is literally hanging by a thread. Well, you guys, sorry to break it to you, but it's real. And I am still holding on to the slightest bit of hope that this is all a dream. I've ordered my very own spinning top to check my reality. I will keep you guys updated on that, okay? Anyway, today I have decided to do an episode on one of the COVID-19 vaccines with its new status as the first vaccine to receive an FDA approval against COVID-19. Now, I thought it would be a good one to talk about. So if y'all are still having a hard time guessing, let me tell you, today I will be talking about the Pfizer BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, aka Comirnaty, on how you pronounce it, Comirnaty vaccine. Now, if you guys are wondering what the difference is between the two, there isn't one. Comirnaty is FDA approved for individuals 16 years and older. Pfizer BioNTech vaccine has an FDA EUA for individuals 12 years and up. Same ingredients, same manufacturer, same vaccine. Oh, and if you need to know some background information on COVID-19 vaccines or the meaning of EUA and some of the other vocabulary that I may use on this episode, check out episode 2. It's called Vaccines for the COVID. Yeah, go check it out. And I really do a deep dive and do a Q&A on the vaccines, all of them. Well, the ones available in America. All right, let's get to it. Pfizer vaccine. Where do I even start? Started with an EUA. Now we got an FDA approval. Look at them. So I am sure that y'all probably know by now, the Pfizer vaccine is an mRNA vaccine. It does not contain a live virus. And mRNA, technically, not DNA. Now it carries some genetic code, but it's not the full genetic code of the virus. Now, this code tells our cells to create spike proteins. Now, spike proteins are a part of the virus that kind of stick out in the open. They use it to target our cells so that they can infect it. The benefits of this kind of vaccine is that it helps our immune cells target the one thing that the virus uses to target our cells. Woohoo! It is like cutting off the arms and legs. That's kind of how I see it in my head. Now, I'm really not going to get into the details because I've talked about this before on my, you know, episode 2. So the bottom line is that mRNA vaccines are vaccines, okay? They just use a different mechanism, one that has never been used in vaccines before. Whew, okay. It's nice to kind of clear that up first. Oh, and also, I need to add that although mRNA vaccines are new and the COVID-19 vaccines got whipped up pretty fast, this technique has actually been studied for decades, okay? It is the first time it has been used, but the trick was just getting the genome of the virus and applying it to this technology that already existed. All right, so let's see. Now, the Pfizer vaccine is a two-dose vaccine given 21 days apart. A third dose may be administered to individuals who are 12 years and older and immunocompromised. And if you miss the 21-day mark, that's fine. You can get the second dose up to 4 days early or 42 days after the first dose. That's about 6 weeks after the first dose. Now, it is recommended for individuals age 12 and older. However, you should know that it is FDA approved for individuals 16 and older. And this is something that gets confused a lot. So when you get that shot in your arm, you're not automatically protected or immunized, whatever you may call it. it will take 14 days for your immune system to kick in. And, you know, then you can say, I'm immunized, I'm protected, whatever. But this is after your second dose, obviously. Now, what are the ingredients in the COVID-19 vaccine? Well, the Pfizer. Well, there's mRNA, which I mentioned. There's some lipids that I cannot pronounce, but these are there to stabilize the mRNA and allow it to be absorbed into the cell, because your cell walls are, or your cell membranes, mostly made of lipids. So it just works out. And potassium chloride is another one. There's also cholesterol. There's potassium phosphate, sodium chloride, sodium phosphate, and sucrose. Now, some of these ingredients are available in IV fluids that you get at the hospital or probably running through your cells right now. So definitely not strangers to your body. Now, these ingredients are actually available for you to view on the vaccine fact sheet whenever you get them, when you're getting your vaccine, or on the FDA website if you want to look at it right now. You can also find it on the CDC website. You can find it wherever you want. It's not hidden. It's there. Now, let's talk safety profile. The vaccine, generally safe. Many studies have shown this. The biggest adverse effect that I know most of you guys want to hear about is the risk of myocarditis, which I did talk about on episode 11 on the motor vehicle injuries episode. Super random, but it was an update. So if you go on the episode, the first few minutes of it, I talk about myocarditis, pericarditis, and all the information surrounding that. All right. Now, according to a large study involving individuals from Israel, because they're way ahead of us on this pandemic and on studying the pandemic, the public health system on point. So it's the Clalit Research Institute in Tel Aviv, Israel, and Harvard University. They did a study on the safety of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, and the risk of myocarditis from the Pfizer vaccine was found to be 1 to 5 events per 100,000 people. And this was seen mostly in men between the ages of 20 and 34. The risk is higher with a COVID-19 infection at 11 events per 100,000 persons. That's about double the risk. The most common symptoms experienced at vaccination, most of you guys already may have heard of this because it comes up a lot. Pain and redness and swelling at the site of the injection, which is common with any vaccine. Literally any vaccine that you get on your arm, you're going to have pain, redness, and swelling. Okay, so other symptoms that you may experience include tiredness, headaches, muscle pain, chills, fever, nausea, and this is your body's reaction to your immune system basically kicking in. Now, most of this adverse events, from what I understand, usually occur within a few minutes to your vaccination to about 6 weeks post-vaccination. And I went on VIRS to look at the list of reported adverse events. It's called Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. You basically can go on there to report any side effect that you experience with the COVID-19 vaccine, generally for any vaccine. But right now, there's been a lot of people using it for the COVID-19 vaccine. And I literally looked through the list of a bajillion reports for you guys, you know. And most of the reports were consistent with what were listed on the CDC website. There were some that stood out to me, but aren't listed because they weren't as many and are probably still being looked into, because technically anyone can go into the VIRS website to report side effects. There's no way to prove whether they got a vaccine or not. It's just one of those things. So it has to be something that's consistent, I guess. And then if they're looking into it, they have to do more research on the person that has reported this event, especially maybe if it was in a hospital, they can get more details on it. But I did just pick them out because some of them were repeated, and I figured if they're repeated enough times, then it has to be like, you know, a known issue or something that's more common. So the ones I found were dizziness, lightheadedness, nausea, tachycardia, high blood pressure, heaviness, a weakness and numbness in the legs, hives, rash, swollen lymph nodes, and chest pain. Now, there were some anaphylactic reactions as well, which is expected with vaccination. Some people do get anaphylactic reaction, which if you're not aware of that, that's a severe allergic reaction where sometimes the face swells up, the throat kind of swells up, and it closes up so you can't kind of get air through to your lungs. It's very dangerous, and it's one of those things that if it were to occur, you will need like a healthcare professional to be there, either give you EpiShot or you may have to go to the emergency room. Well, but this brings me to the following PSA. Now, if you are getting vaccinated, you should let your doctor know if you have any allergies, a history of myocarditis, or have fainted because of a vaccination. There are other things to report, but they will be in the consent form that you will get prior to your vaccination. You should not get the vaccine if you've ever had an allergic reaction to a previous dose of the vaccine. If you've gotten the first dose of the Moderna or the Pfizer and you've had some severe reaction where you almost died, I would say probably not the best idea to go back and get a second shot. Also, if you've had any allergic reactions to the ingredients in the vaccine, so it's important for you to know the ingredients that are in there and if that's something that you're super sensitive to. Now, if you feel some pain or fever or have had any flu-like symptoms, it can help to take some over-the-counter pain medications or antihistamines. Just make sure to ask your healthcare provider or pharmacist prior to taking anything. And also, do not take anything prior to getting your vaccine just to prevent any potential side effects. It's advisable to wait until after. If you do have any side effects, then you take something. For the injection site pain, it does help for you to move your arm a lot. That's helped me with every single shot that I've ever got. Like, I use that particular arm a lot, even though it hurts, because it goes in your muscle and it helps, like, when you use your muscle a lot, for some reason, that just helps it heal faster. You can also try, like, cold compresses with, like, a washcloth with water. But I've never had pain longer than 24 hours with any shot. Obviously, everyone's different, but the one thing that's worked for me is definitely moving my arm a lot. Now, if you experience any life-threatening adverse events from your shot, like feeling like you can't breathe or having numbness, tingling, or chest tightness, or anything that's just out of the ordinary that you feel scared for your life, I would say go to the nearest ER or urgent care. Okay, let's talk booster shots real quick, okay? Real quick. I've had a lot of people ask me whether or not to get a booster shot. That's why I'm bringing this up, because my answer is it depends. It's only recommended right now for individuals who are immunocompromised up to 8 months after their second shot, okay? So the booster dose has not been approved by the FDA yet. It was recommended by HHS. But it's not been approved. It's not been recommended by CDC, ACIP, or FDA. So that's something that they're currently reviewing. It may be available this fall, but we don't know just yet, okay? But the current speculations are that if it did become available, that healthcare providers, residents of long-term facilities, long-term care, and other adults are likely to be the first ones eligible for boosters, because if you think about it, they were the first ones eligible for the first initial dose, so they're probably due for a third dose if we're looking at the 8 months timeline. Immunocompromised, just so you know, because I talked about immunocompromised a lot, immunocompromised will be classified as someone who's receiving an active cancer treatment for tumors or cancers of the blood, or receiving organ transplant and are taking medicine to suppress the immune system, receiving a stem cell transplant within the last 2 years, or are taking a medicine to suppress their immune system, moderate or severe primary immunodeficiency diagnosis, advanced or untreated HIV infection, or active treatment with a high dose corticosteroid or other drugs that may suppress your immune system. So definitely check with your doctor on that if you're not sure what that means, or if you're not sure if you fall into any of these categories. Now let's talk efficacy. This is the part that I really wanted to update on this episode, because so much has changed. So much just changed since my Q&A. At the time when I did my episode, we literally knew nothing about the vaccine, just the evidence from the initial clinical trials, which showed that the vaccine was 95% efficacious at lowering the chance of getting COVID compared to placebo. But now that so many people have gotten the shots, we're getting more data. And recent studies are now showing that a decrease in effectiveness over time, right? So the data initially suggested that the vaccine will offer up to 91% protection average over a 6 month timeline, right? New studies are now showing that after 6 months, this may go down to 84%. With the addition of the Delta variant to the mix, it's now going to be about 78% at preventing an infection. And this is preventing an infection. So mild infection, any kind of infection, this is what we're talking about. So not a surprise. Also, Delta variant is ruthless. And let's not forget that time from vaccination may have a part to play in this, because many of the people who are being studied right now were probably vaccinated earlier in the year. I was vaccinated in January, and it's been about 8 months since I got vaccinated. So at this point, I'm probably at the 66% mark. Anyways, now that we have had more time to study the effectiveness of the vaccine, new data are emerging, right? And this is really giving us a better idea of the importance of the vaccines. Now, I've heard a lot of people talk about the vaccine not working because the people with vaccinations are getting hospitalized. Maybe you know a few people who have, but it's all about the numbers here and how many vaccinated people are getting hospitalized compared to those who are not vaccinated, okay? Because this will give you a better idea of whether the vaccine works or not. So let's get down and dirty into the data. Now, a study that included five VA hospitals between February 1st and August 6th showed that these numbers, they basically showed these numbers on the effectiveness of mRNA vaccines. All right, so here we go. Vaccine effectiveness in preventing COVID-19 related hospitalization, now I said hospitalization, not infection, was 80% among adults 65 and up, and 95% among adults 18 to 64 years old. And overall, they found that the mRNA vaccines were average 86.8% effective in preventing COVID-19 associated hospitalization. So that's pretty good for preventing hospitalization, especially with the Delta variant, because this study did go until August 6th. And at this point, the Delta variant was the predominant variant. So, all right. So, and I wanted to say, looking at the study, I figured it's in the VA. Average of number age for the patients studied was 68, which, no surprise, it's the VA. So I decided to look into other studies, okay, to get more data. So I found another study that involved patients who had to visit urgent care or emergency rooms for COVID-19. So this included 32,867 encounters of adults of all ages from August of 2021. Now, at this time, the Delta variant was the most significant strain, right? Vaccine effectiveness for all three COVID vaccines against hospitalization was at 86%. And for urgent care in emergency department visits, 82%. So basically, for hospitalization, the vaccine showed 86% effectiveness versus urgent care and ED visits. When they showed up to urgent care, they probably didn't have to stay in the hospital or get admitted. This was 82%. All right. However, it was noted that vaccine effectiveness was significantly lower for adults age 75 and older compared to adults that were less than 75 against hospitalization. And to be more specific, vaccine effectiveness was actually higher, or at the highest, among Moderna vaccine recipients, about 92%. And then with Pfizer, it was 77%. And then with J&J, it was 65%. So this data really, literally lines up with the first study that I told you guys. But just for the sake of it, let me add another study to it. I know this is boring you guys to help, but you guys wanted the numbers. I'm giving you the numbers, okay? So a study published by CDC in August, it was actually released pretty recently. It showed that the Pfizer and Moderna mRNA vaccines were approximately 90% effective in preventing symptomatic and asymptomatic infection. Now, this study was special because it included frontline workers across six states between December of 2020 to August of 2021. So it's been an ongoing study since the vaccination started. Now, between December 14 to August 14, full vaccination with COVID-19 vaccine was 80% effective in preventing a COVID-19 infection. Now, If you need more information on the COVID-19 vaccine, it's all out there. This information is all out there. You just have to really try not to avoid it, okay? I got a lot of my data from MMWR, which is the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. And if you go on CDC website, they actually dumb this down a lot so that you can just like, basically it gives you a summary of the results as opposed to all this statistical information that you have to go through and kind of pull the data out. So it's a lot easier to understand if you do want to find this stuff. It's all out there. The FDA also has all the information about the vaccine, so you can check that out. They have all the safety information. And if you like a more global perspective on the vaccine, check out the WHO website because I do find a lot of information on there as well. Okay, now that we've gone through some serious details about the vaccine, you now know some of the information that's out there. Don't tell me you don't know because I just told you, okay? There are many other vaccines, and I will try to talk about them at some point, especially AstraZeneca. I know that I've kind of left that out a lot, but that's because it's not really available in the U.S. And there's not a lot of data in the U.S. on AstraZeneca, but I know that some of you guys do not live in the U.S., so you may be more familiar with this vaccine. So I'll try to gather some details on it for you, so stay tuned. If you still are unsure about the vaccine, contact your healthcare provider because I think that they can give you more details that are more catered to your personal health. Last thing I wanted to make sure to tell you is that it is so important for you to report side effects if you have gotten the vaccine, so report them to VIRS. I cannot overly stress the importance of reporting it because it will provide accurate information on the vaccine so that it can be studied and it can be put out there. All right, so at this point, my head hurts from all the research that I've been doing, so I'm gonna call it a day. But the bottom line, the moral of the story is that you guys need to go get vaccinated if you haven't already. The end. That's all I have to say. All right. And I may be a quote and unquote sheep for believing in this stuff, but I am a pharmacist. And I did get my bachelor's in biology and I'm getting my master's in public health. So this is literally my life. Science is a language that I understand very well and I believe in it. So I am going to continue laying out the facts for as long as I can. And if you don't want to listen, you don't have to. But if you want to, the information is out there. So we have come to the end of this episode. And I really hope you guys enjoyed it. Like I say on every single episode, subscribe if you haven't already so you do not miss another episode. Also, leave a positive review, only positive, no negative, and drop a comment. Let me know how you feel about this episode and what you'd like to hear about in future episodes. Find me on Instagram, Facebook at Health Facts, facts spelled with the CX at the end. Y'all know already. Please slide into my DM. Also, check out my blog, www.healthfacts.com. Same spelling. Now, if you're not on social media, you can actually use that to reach out to me about topics that you're interested in hearing about. And if you do read my blog, I'm so sorry I haven't updated that in a while. I will try to put this information on there for you guys. I will try to be on it, okay? So thank you guys for listening. I am Dr. B, and I am out.